97.1 QMG, Hello. The best R&B and old school. And much thanks again to Joseph Lovell, your host of Saturday's edition of Today's Praise. Nothing like starting the day with morning inspiration. I am officially inspired, and hence I am here. Renee Vaughn, welcoming you to our public affairs show that gets the word out and lets you know what's happening in our community. Welcome to the Saturday edition of Community Focus. As I say good morning to Algernon Cash, regular of the QF family. Good morning to you, Algernon.
Hey there.
Good to have you back.
Yeah. Happy weekend.
Yes.
How's it going so
far? It's going pretty good. You know how these weekends, they seem to want to kind of escape us.
Yeah. Creep
next thing we know,
us,
yeah, as we like to tease on the Tom Joyner Morning Show, that's Monday trying to knock on the door
there,
but we're not going to let it in.
Yeah.
Let's put it that way. But Algernon, again, it's always good to have you on the show. And today.
And always a pleasure. Always
well,
enjoy myself
much.
On Saturday morning here.
Absolutely. You have become quite a regular around here without question. But today we're going to have a very interesting topic of discussion. Well, anything we talk about on Community Focus, it's good that we have this outlet to allow our listeners to really participate in the conversation. But this morning we really are going to have an open dialogue.
We are.
On our topic of
on
discussion.
On a very important topic, too.
Absolutely. Yeah. Which this morning we are focusing on this very question. And for those who didn't get a chance to hear me as I promoted it yesterday to let people know what our subject matter was going to be about, for those just getting up this morning, let me give you an opportunity to kind of let this question sink in a little bit. And then you can give us a call here in the studio at 336-680-9710. Is racism still alive? That's our question this morning, Algernon.
Here in America, or
Absolutely.
Even right here in your own backyard,
That's
I
right.
suppose. Yeah.
That's right. And so that is what we're going to be focusing on as we want to say good morning to very special guest who has joined us in the studio. We'll give him a few minutes to kind of get himself settled in. But Algernon, if you will do the honors and tell us a little bit about this young man who's with us this morning.
Brian Sims is an assistant professor of psychology over at North Carolina A&T, and he's going to be sort of helping us out a little bit with the discussion this morning. Brian had actually sort of informally joined Buster and I one Tuesday to talk about some things related to hip-hop and some other things, but I, you know, within the hour, I'll let Brian tell you more about himself. But he's definitely going to help us out with the discussion this morning. But you know, essentially, you know, I feel like what's going on right now in American politics and sort of this sudden rise of Senator Obama as a nominee from the Democratic Party, first time an African American right. has held that honor from a major party. I mean, clearly it sort of brought a spotlight back on race, and I think it's caused people to think about some things, and it's awakened some people to some things that are going on in our country. I mean, you and I were talking off air about the special that was on CNN this
right.
week, so,
right.
you know, we'll probably hit on that within the hour, too.
Absolutely.
But, I mean, you know, I think it's great. I mean, if anything comes out of this, even if, you know, I always say this, even if Senator Obama does not make it across the finish line in November, I think at least it's caused some people to refocus their attention on some of the racial issues in America.
Absolutely. I think it's really caused a lot of us to sort of wake up literally and open our eyes.
It really has. It really has. And if it hasn't, it should.
Yeah, absolutely.
It definitely should.
Absolutely.
I mean, if anyone has seen any of the photographs of the, you know, the 200,000 people that were waiting in Berlin for
yeah.
Senator Obama. And when you looked out into that crowd, I mean, I saw, you know, a few black faces, actually. You know, a lot of those were actual white faces. So, yeah, I mean, if you haven't been awakened to some of what he's doing, and I'm really right now trying to separate what he's doing and the barriers he's breaking down away from what he's doing politically.
Exactly.
Because even I don't completely agree with a lot of the solutions that he's presenting to the issues. But from a breaking down racial barriers standpoint, I mean, he's definitely making a lot of history.
Absolutely. Well, Algernon, I don't want to leave Brian out of the conversation.
All right. He's all set up.
He is set up and ready to go. Good morning
to
you.
Good morning. Good morning.
It is a pleasure to have you. First time that I'm actually having the opportunity to meet you face to face. I've heard you in discussions with Algernon and Buster, so this is a treat for me, Brian.
No, I'm honored. Trust me, the pleasure is all mine.
Well, thank you very much. And this is humor here. You don't look like a professor. you just have that youthfulness about you, which I think sometimes can play in your favor. Sometimes might go against you a little bit. Is it kind of down the middle, or
I'll reserve no comment.
Fair enough.
I'll take
not a problem. Thank you very much, and thank you for being with us in the studio this morning. And as I mentioned to Algernon, and just as you were walking in, that this is really the first time I think for this particular program that we're having this type of open dialogue, and with our topic, racism, is it still alive? And the fact that I'm sure this is something that you have had an opportunity to share with your students on a consistent basis.
Absolutely. I mean, one of the interesting things for me is the amount of variance and perspectives that you get among students in that 18 to 24 type of demographic.
Absolutely.
You know, I think I see a lot of students in the psychology department at A&T who come from, you know, backgrounds where they don't come face to face with what you or I might call white America on a regular basis.
Right.
These are individuals who largely went to predominantly black elementary schools, middle schools, high schools, and now at an HBCU environment really don't have tangible real-life examples of, you know, some of the more negative experiences that I think some of the individuals from other walks of life might have had. So I think one of the biggest misconceptions is that every individual at an HBCU is walking around with this mindset of me against the world,
right,
or, you know, black versus white. So
right.
I think it's a very, very important discussion.
Absolutely, and glad that we have this opportunity to have it. And again, we want to get our audience involved on the conversation as well. So we do invite you to reach us here in the studio. The number, of course, 336-680-9710. Gentlemen, if you don't mind, let me get the ball rolling.
Sure.
And kind of put into perspective and base this on my personal experience and sharing with you and our listeners this morning. I think my first sort of overt experience with racism actually occurred when I moved here, believe it or not. I was born a product of the 70s,
mm-hmm,
in Washington, D.C., and really not growing up to hear too much, for starters, of the N-word. It was something that was just not discussed in my family, which, by the way, I came from a predominantly female household. So that word was never really used. If I heard it, may have come from other outlets outside of the family.
Sure.
You know, but my, I guess you can say my first real experience was coming here and hanging out with some girlfriends of mine. And I don't recall how young I was. Let's say about 10 or 11 at the time. And it just so happened, we're just walking around the neighborhood, just minding our own business. And just out of the blue, from what I can remember, there were three white boys on bicycles just driving by. And next thing I knew, they had thrown something out on the street. No clue as to what it was until we walked up on it. And it just so happened to be change. They just threw change out on the street. You know, all sorts of denominations, from pennies, dimes, nickels, what have you. But the point was, it was what they said that kind of had a stinging effect. And that's what made me realize, okay, this is the kind of world we're living in. And mind you, this is late 70s.
Yeah, yeah.
At the time. And it was the fact they said, well, you know, Ann, pick that change up because, you know, we know you need it. And I was like, okay, where is this coming from? You know, we didn't do anything to you. We didn't do anything to incite the reasoning of why you did it. And then it got me to thinking, you know, that's pretty sad that you have three individuals who probably were in that environment where they heard that word a lot.
Yeah.
From either a father or a grandfather, and maybe even further back, a great-grandfather.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah.
And you know, you at the you know, at the end of your story there, you sort of hit on an important part about sort of where they may have heard that at, or actually got that type of language from, or even those types of actions where they would have been inspired to commit those types of actions. And you really have to look at the generational breakdown. I mean, when you look at my generation, which is probably the generation right after your own, I mean, I've never actually experienced any type of overt racism.
Yeah.
And, you know, you have to wonder, well, have I been a victim of covert racism?
Yeah.
Well, if I have, I've never really known it. So,
exactly.
You know, you've sort of gotten to this point in America where maybe there's not this element of overt racism. Mm-hmm. You don't have some of the things that used to go on maybe 30, 40 years ago. Yeah, surely covert racism still exists. It's almost, if you were to commit overt racism nowadays, you would be looked at, you know, as if someone was, you know, someone would say, are you crazy? I mean, this is 2008.
Exactly.
But, you know, it's amazing to me that how the younger generations nowadays, they don't even look for it at all. I mean, because they haven't been a victim of that overt racism.
Exactly.
like some of the older generations.
And Brian, that's where I want to bring you into the conversation, because I think that's a perfect transition with you being a professor, and you have students who are typically about 17, 18 years of age,
sure,
21,
mm-hmm,
not quite into the real world just yet. So when you have an opportunity to, just like we're having our conversation this morning and we're sharing stories about what happened during the civil rights movement, Do you find it, or do your students find it kind of hard to put themselves in that situation? Because just like Algernon said, this is 2008 compared to the state of America back in 1968.
That's right. Yeah.
Right. I think generalizations are tough because, like I said, you get a lot of different types of students. Just a quick observation from one of my colleagues. So I was reading a study done on NPR recently, and they surveyed black high school students in the state of Georgia about some basic civil rights trivia type facts.
Right.
Now, this is Georgia. Two-thirds of those students thought that it was Martin Luther King who actually freed the slaves. Wow. Now, I mean, if we let that sink in for a second, we're talking about, you know, without doubt, the most notable civil rights leader whose home state was Georgia.
Right.
And to have, you know, students with such a huge misconception about who he was, I think kind of speaks to the general disconnect that, you know, we're talking about in terms of these types of experiences. So I would say yes. You know, students largely seem, I won't say lost on it, but I'll say, you know, again, without actual, you know, tangible firsthand knowledge of the struggle.
I think you said the best word, the disconnect, mm-hmm. is because they weren't there. They didn't live that.
But I don't know if the disconnect is completely driven by the fact that they weren't there. I wasn't there, and I knew who freed the slaves, and I know who Martin Luther King is, and you know, a lot of the even debates you and I have about politics. I mean, I've taken the time to sort of look back and see, you know, some of the events that have occurred in our culture. Now I think where that disconnect really comes from is really more from their parents. Their parents a lot of times aren't even educated about the proper way that things happen, so they're not even encouraging their children to go out and become educated. And I often say that, you know, we don't want to become prisoners of history. You know, I mean, we've got some people that are walking around in mental prisons because of our history. They will never trust a white person. They will never deal with a white person. And they always will go through their day and their life thinking that the quote unquote white man is out to get me and has complete control over me. And that's because they are prisoners of history. I think we need to study history. We need to recognize what happened in history. We clearly need to show respect to those that sort of led us out of the struggle. But we also need to take those positives from history, and we use those to create a better future.
And that's what I was thinking. That was my mindset as well, is to sort of get away from, like you said, that negativity, Algernon, of thinking all white people are, as Malcolm X said back in his early days of his philosophy, you know, the white man is the devil. Until,
sure,
you know, he had his own experience with his trip to Mecca.
That's right, yeah.
And then saw the world in a totally different perspective and said, you know, wait a minute, let me back up here, put on the brakes, screech, that type of situation.
And it just opened up a lot more for him when I think he went over and saw black and white sort of dealing with one another. So, yeah.
And found out that we really could get along.
Yeah, we could get along and work together. So
336-680-9710. Gentlemen, let's go to the phone line. It's a good Saturday morning. Thank you for your patience, and thank you for calling into Community Focus. How are you?
Good morning, Renee. It's Michelle.
Hi, Michelle. How you feeling, sweetheart? And I'm so sorry. Forgive me. You know the busy lady that I am. I had a chance to call you.
That's fine. I just got home from the hospital yesterday.
Bless your heart. How you feeling?
I'm hanging in there. I had 19 days almost went away from here.
Wow.
I was very, very sick. But I'm calling in because racism has been a part of a real big part of what's going on where I come from. I come from a county called Johnston. When we were small, we were kind of like y'all, you know, playing out in the street and doing whatever. But we knew not to go in certain yards. We knew not to say things to certain people. You know, when you go downtown and your mama got you downtown, there's a whole bunch of you. We knew not to say things to certain women or whatever because we knew that we would get in trouble for it. Because first thing they would say, well, boy, where's your mama? Or gal, where's your mama? And my mama would hurry us up and say, we're sorry to bother you. We're sorry to bother you. And as a child, you'd be like, well, what did I do? and then you say, well, Mama, all I did was speak. Well, you don't speak to people like that. Well, they're just like us. No, they ain't just like us. Well, explain to me what's different. And when you're a child, you don't understand it. And then I'm a product of the 60s. I was born in the 60s. And I was in D.C. when they tore D.C. up after they did Martin Luther King. And it was just unnerving to me to know that people were just so caught up in color and how things are supposed to be. And I wish that our children really understood the struggle that consisted then and that is still going on now, which they don't give a hill of beans about. They like caught up in space. And if you ask somebody about something from African-American history, they look at us like you're crazy. And I wish that the school system would teach African-American history, would teach some of our history.
And see, you know, and not to cut you off, Michelle, I think that's an important point. We cannot rely on government schools, and I don't say public schools. I will often say government schools because that's exactly what they are. They are government-funded. They are government-mandated. They are government-ran. We cannot rely on government schools to educate our kids about our history. We have to be willing to sacrifice. We got to be willing to do the research, the homework on our own. We got to be willing to educate our own kids in our own houses about our own history. And that's the only way to assure that they're actually going to get that education.
Because we're the ones who live through it.
Exactly.
So who better to explain this to our children and our grandchildren than us?
And Michelle makes another good point. She touched on color. And I would challenge you to say that there really is no such thing as race. And I'd love to hear what Brian has to say about this. There really is no such thing as racism. There's a such thing as colorism, because when you look at racism, we are actually all one race. We are all part of the human race. But many, many years ago, centuries ago, we as humans created this idea of colorism, separating people based on if they were white-skinned or black-skinned or dark-skinned or light-skinned. So even within the own African-American culture, you have this colorism where, well, I don't like Brian because he's a lighter shade than me or he's a darker shade than me. So there really isn't this idea of racism. It's all based on colorism.
And I think it's all part of that ism, too, because when you add to that, you break it down even further. Well, I don't like so-and-so because he makes more money than I do. You know, he's a little taller.
So it becomes a socioeconomic scale as well. But
you know, and I hate to say that because there are people that they say that our races are like crabs in a bucket. One of us try to get to the top of the bucket, they pull us back. But I don't believe that either, because if you're going to make it in this world, you're going to make it. But when you were growing up, how old are you? What did you have black teachers when you were growing up?
Yes, I did. I
did as well.
I did have black teachers when I was growing up.
Okay, see, well, I went to school where there were mostly black children, and then they mixed us up. But in the black schools, they taught us about our heritage. They made sure that we knew, if it weren't nothing but a semester of black history, we knew it. And now in the... we can say at white schools or whatever they're teaching. I think they're teaching a test and not teaching us for life. There's no talking about black history except for February.
Well, let's hear from a professor on that particular subject, and Brian, to get you in on the conversation and your comments.
I think it's interesting. I'm going to go ahead and respectfully disagree with Algernon, as he knows. We've had this discussion several times before. I think racism is... not imaginary. One of the interesting things is the ability to differentiate between racism at the individual level and racism at the institutional or systemic level. So you read authors like Mumia Abu-Jamal or more recently William C. Roden's text on it's about the professional athletes community. It's a text called $40 Million Slaves. Both of these works, both of these authors are really good at pointing out racism at the institutional level. Couple quick examples. If you look at any of the major economic indicators, whether it be welfare, whether it be education, whether it be health care, you name it, African Americans have been at the absolute bottom of the chain in this country since its inception. And so if someone were going to advance this idea that racism is kind of leaving or dissolving or something like that, I would say, point to the evidence. So when we look at, for example, the housing gap between black Americans and their white counterparts, it's actually worse today in 2008 than it was during the civil rights era.
That's not true. That's not true.
So
you don't think so?
In the last few years of our easy credit in this country, and I don't know how the exact statistics, but more minorities have become homeowners in the last, I'd say, 3 or 4 years than the last 20 years.
Clearly. So let me clarify. I mean relative to their white counterparts. So that
and Algernon, I'm not gonna we don't put this out there on the table. And more of us have gotten caught up in the lending thing where people are taking our houses,
and
because they had their easy credit, and everybody was trying to give us credit, and you know those people who knew they couldn't afford a $2,000 mortgage. Mortgage went up. Some of them went up to four. I got some friends' mortgages went up to $4,000.
So Michelle, do you point that finger at the bank, or do you point it at the person that signed the loan documents?
I pointed at the person that signed the loan documents because they're not educated about it. I'm not saying that. I'm saying that that bank knew when the person came in there, if they were a person of color, that they couldn't afford. So they should have
down. And the person that actually went in and applied for the loan, they didn't know that they couldn't afford it.
So this is why
they knew better than anyone that they couldn't afford it. But yet they still signed on for a loan that they couldn't afford.
So do we say both groups were wrong in this?
That's what I'm saying. You cannot. It's not a black or white issue. It's a lot of gray area there. And if you just try to make an argument that it's the evil lenders or it's the evil white lenders that caused all this, that's a very shallow argument, and it's not deep enough for me.
I got to disagree, Renee. This is why I said you have to differentiate between the individuals and the system. So you're right. Is it superficial to walk in and point the finger or the blame at the white mortgage lender, that individual who's working for Wachovia, which, as we see in the last week, lost some
$8 billion.
You know, or whatever lending institution. Do you point the finger at that individual? Clearly not, right? So racism is not really showing up at that level right there. We have to look at the system as a whole. So when I mean the housing gap, I mean the discrepancy between white Americans and their black counterparts. And you see it in, like I said, every single major indicator. It's not just in finance. It's in education. So you talk about the standardized test score gap has widened again in that period. If you look at the incarceration rate, it has gotten worse. So every single, you know, indicator, every piece of objective evidence that you would point to indicates that we're doing worse and worse. Now, that can't be coincidental. That can't be because we're not as smart or we're not as wealthy or we're not as legal. Right. There's a system out there, I believe, and many others do, that's, you know, designed to see us fail. And once you stop looking, once you stop looking at the individual, as in that white man is out to get me, and start just looking at the objective knowledge, what other thinkers have referred to as the matrix, then you can't help but acknowledge that racism still exists.
I'm going to let you have the last word, at least for now, because we need to go to break.
Sure.
But as soon as we come back, we invite everyone who's listening, and the lines are lighting up already, so we're going to make this quick.
I think I done opened up a can of worms.
That's a surprise.
That's okay. No. I like this. We're going to commercial with a good debate going on this morning. I want to keep it going as far as we can before we get to 7 o'clock. So the sooner we get to this break.
Well, I just thought I'd call in and give my 2 cents worth.
Absolutely. Well, you know, I appreciate your listenership, Michelle.
Okay, sweetie.
And I'll be praying for you, darling. Get well.
All right.
God bless you.
Bye.
Thank you. Bye. 336-680-9710. Saturday's edition of Community Focus continues on the best R&B and old school, 97.1 QMG.
All right.
Okay, people.
That's 1-800-500-2260.
And you can call us here. Saturday's edition of Community Focus as we're back from break, 336-680-9710. Renee Vaughn, joined by Algernon Cash and also Brian Sims, assistant professor at North Carolina A&T State University. Algernon, of course, with Wharton and Gladden LLC. And gentlemen, let's go right to the phone lines because we have too good of a conversation going right now.
And we're having a fair and balanced
debate, and that's the way it should be.
As Fox News would often say.
Yeah, I think we're a little more balanced.
A little more balanced than them. All
exactly.
Right. Algernon, did you say the F word?
Yeah.
Oh, sorry, FCC. Okay, we just might get a fine here.
Yeah.
Good Saturday morning. Welcome to Community Focus. Thank you for your call. Hello, caller, are you there?
Hey, Ms. Renee.
Yes, good morning.
Good morning. How you doing?
Doing fine. How about you?
I'm great. Couldn't be better. This is Frederick.
Hi, Frederick. How are you?
I'm good. Enjoying the guests. I didn't catch the names again.
I have Algernon Cash with me this morning, and I also have Brian Sims.
Good morning.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning.
I was calling in. I was listening to your topic, and I believe that that labels drives racism. I think that when our kids or our young people are not validated at an early age, oftentimes it allows someone else to label them, and then instead of them creating a label, they become a label, in essence, and that's what oftentimes drives racism, is because we don't validate our young boys and girls, and I just wanted to get the gentleman's thoughts on that this morning. I hang up while I listen to you give your answer.
Okay, well, Frederick, first of all, I appreciate your call. Good to hear from you. How is the Smalley family?
Everybody's well. All is well.
Good, good. Give them my love for me. And we appreciate your call, and now we're going to respond to your comment. Right. Thank you, Frederick, and you have a great weekend.
Yeah, Renee, I'm going to take a swing at that one and sort of building off the point that we went to break with, you know, and Brian sort of brought up the point about this sort of not necessarily looking at racism based on an individual level, but maybe looking at it more on a systemic level. And you know, and the caller's point is, hey, we don't necessarily always validate our younger kids. And it's hard. I mean, it's hard for a lot of people, or it's hard for a lot of parents, because they do have this idea that the system is against them. So what they end up doing is they sort of pass that same fear or that same idea along to their children. And I don't know if it's always voluntarily as much as it's just their children sort of witnessing some of their language,
right?
Witnessing some of their actions and sort of the way they respond to certain things. But I would challenge Brian, and I would also challenge anyone else out here that's listening that believes that we do have this sort of quote unquote the system is against us, or there's this racism within the system, then I would say that, you know, why didn't the system stop Obama? This is a gentleman that has risen up, that he's been a state senator, he's been a United States senator, he obviously has been a great community organizer. He's done a lot of different things. I would also go on to say he didn't need affirmative action to get in United States Senate or into the state Senate. He did that by election. But why didn't the system come out against him? Why didn't they stop him?
Well, that's my question. And I will be interested in what your comments will be, Algernon and Brian, given the fact that, number one, Barack Obama is biracial. He comes from a Nigerian father and a white mother. He grew up in the Kansas area. Do you think society kind of gave him a break because he kind of has the best?
I'll let my brother swing on that one, Brian, first, because I see him over there thinking hard, so I'm going to let him take a swing on that one first.
All right.
No better discussion than Barack Obama, right?
Yeah,
so
exactly.
You got a really interesting case study of an individual who has at least attempted socially and politically to try to live the best of both worlds.
Right.
He has totally leveraged this position, the strategic position of having an inroads to the Black America, but also being able to resonate and speak and basically, use the vernacular of white America.
Right.
Has he gotten a break because of that? I don't think so.
You don't think so?
I would take the more nationalist perspective and say that Barack Obama is accepted to the degree that he is by white America because he advances the goals, aims, traditions, cultural, moral values of white America.
Now, do you think racism from...
That's an interesting
that is
perspective,
an interesting,
yeah.
But do you think the racism comes into play because, of course, the last big story, as we all know, was the big situation that happened on Fox News, incidentally, with Jesse Jackson making the comments that he made.
Yep. Look at Barack Obama juxtaposed to versus any of these more traditional purveyors of blackness, right? When you pit him against Jesse, you've got a major conflict. Yeah. Obviously, when you pit him against Jeremiah Wright, you've got an obvious conflict. So this, to me, just says that, you know, it's not as much as black Barack Obama getting a break for his blackness. It's more of, again, this is just in my opinion, white America embracing him because, for the most part, he's representing them.
And I can see where he's coming from on this one. When you look inside of America, we're often referred to as this great melting pot. And it's because in America, you either tend to conform to a certain ideal or a certain vision of what America is,
right,
or you're sort of on the outside.
Yeah.
And this isn't just in Black America. I mean, if you look back in history, when the Italians came, it was the same scenario. When the Jewish came, it was the same scenario. When other races or other cultures migrated here to America, either you sort of conformed or you became a part of this overall big vision of what America is.
Exactly.
And you can recall that white America, or you can refer to it as whatever you want to refer to it as. But either you sort of become a part of the party or you're on the outside of the party.
Right.
And when you're on the outside of the party, they tend to treat you pretty bad.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure. I think it's whether it was Obama or whether it was Renee Vaughn or Busta Brown, Algernon Cash, whoever it is. When you come to the center and when you do sort of represent what overall America is about, you do sort of get a pass.
Right.
So
oh, yeah.
I can sort of see where he's going with his comment.
I mean, we don't need to talk. It's Barack Obama. It's Michael Jordan. It's Oprah Winfrey.
Yeah.
It's Tiger Woods.
Colin Powell.
And that was my next question. Is it fair for a person who is biracial? Because that seems to be sort of the position an individual is put in. Is you have to sort of pick and choose.
Yeah.
I mean, I think Tiger Woods sort of is the best example of this. When he said he's Caucasian,
wow.
He said he's Black, he's African, he's Asian, he's all of these different things. But it's like, okay, society is saying you're a Black man just because of this, of what the outside color of your skin is.
Yeah, I don't think you should have to pick and choose at all.
I mean,
he's, once again, he represents all those cultures, and,
exactly.
And he, I think he wants to show respect and honor to all those cultures.
And I think that's a representation of the human race that you have been talking about.
Yeah, I mean, I hate when we, you know, I mean, there obviously is colorism, and it's sort, and it's just a play on words, but as soon as we start to recognize and accept and acknowledge that we really are all part of the same race, then those are the steps that we need in the right direction to have this sort of reconciliation and the healing that we need amongst cultures. And just recognize that obviously a lot of times, whether it's systemic or whether it's individual, you know, individuals or whatever it is, a lot of times people are just prejudiced, not, and it's just because of your color.
Yeah.
There is no such race as just the Black race or the white race. We're all the human race, but we just happen to be a melting pot of races.
336-680-9710. We don't want to leave our listeners out on this conversation. Good Saturday morning. Thank you for your patience, and go right ahead. Welcome to Community Focus. How are you? Hello? Caller, are you there? Okay. We lost that call. 336-680-9710. Good morning. Welcome to Community Focus. Thank you for your call. Good morning.
Good morning.
How are you, sir?
I'm doing all right. How are you?
Doing good. Thank you. Go right ahead with your question or comment.
Oh, yes, I was calling in on the racism.
Yes, sir, and we would love to hear what you have to say.
Yes, ma'am. Well, I'm a white man, but I was raised up by a prominent Black family, and I don't think that the racism is as much as the human race as it is against, like they say, the color. I was put out of home because I didn't agree with what the white people and my family did, so I was put out when I was 13, and I had a Black family raise me.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I'm married to a Black lady. I have mixed kids.
Mm-hmm.
So the racism thing to me is it's predominantly on the color. It's not on the people, but I don't think it's fair. You know, the world's not fair because of color.
Yeah, I mean, your call is dead on there. I mean, there's not a lot you can say about that.
No,
yeah.
No. And an interesting situation, here is a gentleman who happens to be a white male.
Raised by a Black
white,
family.
That's right. So you don't hear stories about this every day.
That's not typical at all.
So to have, here's a situation where a gentleman really has a firsthand perspective of, shall we say, living the Black experience, because technically he did if he was raised by a Black family.
I got to jump in and disagree with that. A white man raised by a Black family still is not living the Black experience.
You don't think so?
No, ma'am. That's an insult to the generations and generations of African-Americans who struggled, put up with all manner of disrespect, violence, aggression in this country. So with respect to the gentleman and his background, I don't think that coming from a Black family gives you any more of an entree into the Black experience.
Yeah, well, I mean, and
not in this American landscape.
Right. Yeah.
Well, sir, we appreciate your call and thank you for your input this morning.
All right, thank
you. All right, you're welcome. Bye bye.
So yeah, that is definitely interesting.
Mm-hmm, it is.
You normally, like I said, you normally wouldn't hear a story like that.
No.
So that is.
But I like the fact that we can agree to disagree.
Oh yeah.
So this is a great conversation.
Oh, yeah.
Let's keep it going. Let's take another quick break. These phone lines are ringing off the hook, so we're gonna get back to you as soon as we can. Saturday's edition of Community Focus on the best R&B and old school, 97.1 QMG. We are back after this.
Up to get an HD radio in your car. For an in-car expert near you, visit HDradio.com. It's time to upgrade.
The best R&B and old school in Saturday's edition of Community Focus. Thanks to those of you who are just tuning in. Our topic this morning is racism still alive, and we certainly want to hear from you. That is me, Renee Vaughn, along with Brian Sims, Associate Professor of North Carolina A&T State University, and Algernon Cash of Wharton & Gladden LLC. Gentlemen, shall we go right back to these phone lines?
Let's do it.
All right, 336-680-9710. Good morning and welcome to Community Focus. Thank you for your call.
Yes, good morning. My name is Gloria, and I'm calling from High Point.
Yes, Gloria.
And I'm listening to your radio station, and it is very informative this morning. I have 13 grandchildren in school right now, and like the gentleman was saying, they're not taught in the schools today. So I was calling to see, is there anywhere on the website where you can go and find this information?
Wow.
That's a very good point.
Yeah, probably more places than you can handle. I'm certain Brian's going to be able to give you a few sites as well. But you know, one of my things, and I'm probably going to be a little different than Brian on this, I really enjoy documentaries. That's my big thing. I really love video documentaries because
a lot of times
if I can see what's going on
right.
and I can see some of the action as the storyline is progressing, it seems to resonate a little bit better with me and I remember it a little bit better.
Right. But I don't know about you, and I don't mean to cut you off, but some documentaries that I watch, especially when they show footage from the civil rights movement, and you see black people getting hosed, you see them getting beat, you see them getting lynched. Fists are so clenched.
Makes you connect to what was really going on.
It does, but
it kind of makes me
angry at the same time.
With you cutting you off, I'm 55, so I was back in that era.
Yeah.
I did walk the streets. I did get hit in the face. I did get called a nigger. So I can relate to all of this, okay?
Yeah.
So, you know, I mean, it's when you're watching those documentaries, it can sort of make you think about how people felt when those things were really going on.
Right.
When that was really occurring in the actual media back in that time. So one of the things that I do, and this is actually going to require you to just spend a couple of dollars if you're up to it, but Netflix is a really good way to do it if you want to do it on the web, because you can actually watch a lot of the documentaries over the internet. And I think you end up paying maybe $10 or less or something like that per month. But you've got access to their video library, and there's all types of documentaries that are made from white Americans and black Americans. So you can actually check out who the filmmakers are, and you can watch a lot of documentaries online. I tend to do a lot of that.
Yeah.
What do you do, Brian?
Yeah, the documentary piece is really important. First of all, let me say shout out to Ms. Gloria for 13.
I'm telling you, I was going to add.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Amen to that.
Do definitely do your thing. Much respect to you. And then also one point I was going to make earlier is that notion of black history and thought being taught in schools is absolutely right on. And it's not just K-12. We also see it in higher education.
Absolutely.
Yeah, because you can ask them a question and they'd be like, well, who is this? Well, who invented sugar cane? They think a white man did all this stuff.
Yeah.
We just didn't have the money back then to patent what we had.
Right. If you're looking for a website specifically, I think your question, I'm a member of the Association of Black Psychologists. Their national website has a wealth of information about resources that you can check into. Their website is abpsi.org, abpsi.org.
All right, and thank you all so much.
You're welcome.
Much.
Thank you, Gordon.
Have a great day.
You do the same. Before I let you go, quiz, what are the ages of your grandkids?
Oh, Jesus. I'm going to tell you the years that they were born. They started out in 1986 when my mother died. That was my first one.
Okay.
I had one born in 88. Two born in 90, one in 91, one in 92, one in 93, one in 95, one in 97, one in 98, one in 99, and the last one was born in 2001.
I am impressed.
God very good.
Bless you. Bless you, Gloria. Thank you for your call.
Thank you for the phone call.
Yep. All right.
All
bye-bye.
Right. You take care. Bye-bye. That is truly amazing.
Oh, yeah.
336-680-9710. Thank you for calling into Community Focus. Good morning.
Good morning. Yes, I just wanted to say this is such an important issue here, and I just wanted to make the comment about prejudice and racism and those things are just a distraction from what it really is the love and the hate. And I think that even the words, and being a spiritual people, I mean, we have to understand that words do have power. And just using the term black and white meaning up and black meaning down, has an effect upon the self-esteem of our children going to schools that for the most part, talks about European culture and European languages and so forth. And it's just disinterest to people who of other languages, and it's not equal justice and fair and equality as it's such, with liberty and justice for all. It's like we're sending our kids to places where there is no God, expecting them to come out godlike, and then we blame the parents who, for the most part, has come out of these same schools and now are parents of today and having no education themselves or know how to, wasn't raised themselves and don't know how to raise the child, and we point fingers at them. And as African Americans, I blame the church. And the church has to take the responsibility of building schools and teaching our children and taking care of our elderly and things like that. We have to take care of our own and focus more on what we need to do as a people rather than looking to man to solve our problems. And so we still using the same slave terms of black and white, saying that this and don't, and say, well, when I say black, I don't really mean that. It's not what one means. It's what the word means. And there is life and death in words. And as the scripture says, as a spiritual people, we have to understand that if you can say unto this mountain, be thou removed, or say unto the tree, or the centurion saying that I'm not worthy, just speak the word only, words have power. There is life and death in the tongue. And we speak these words and say, well, we are knowledgeable and educated people and what have you. But I don't think that real knowledge comes through man, of being learning from man. But I do believe that real knowledge comes from God, and the only way we can get out of the bondage of our minds and renew our minds and be on the right track is really accept and ponder some of the real knowledge from God, that we don't have to speak these things no more. We don't have to put up trees and buy hen eggs and spend all our resources into things that doesn't have anything to do with our freedom, like the Emancipation Proclamation of 1863. Nobody pop a firecracker for my freedom, but we pop firecrackers for the freedom of the land, but not the man, and buy hot dogs and all these things and spend all our resources toward things that doesn't have anything to do with us. And in 1776, we were still in bondage.
Yeah.
So,
well, you know, and not to cut you off there, I mean, I think you make some very good points, but you make a comment that I blame the churches, and I think, once again, that's a part of the problem. We tend to find, or want to find, blame in some external, out sort of whatever, out-of-body source outside of us. When a lot of times we've got to look for that blame internally. If your children or if your kids don't understand African-American history, if your children or your kids aren't educated about personal finance or they don't know certain things, it's not the school's fault, it's not the government's fault, it's not the church's fault. You have to educate them on these things. Because the problem is when you say that it's someone's fault, if I say that it's Brian's fault because my child graduates from A&T and doesn't know a certain thing, at that very point, what I've done is I've actually transferred my creative energy, my ability to create a successful outcome to this other person or this other thing. The only way to actually harness that creative energy is to actually accept a responsibility for those things you don't have, or where you're not, or where you want to be. And when you accept that responsibility, then you actually can unleash that creative energy to create a successful outcome for yourself or for the child that you brought into the world.
And sir, can I say this?
Yes.
One of the things about, for as I can understand about African Americans themselves, is that when we begin to become free and begin to move up in this particular land, it started from the church, and we began
That's
to teach
right,
from the church, and we was all together taking care of. You could go over one person's house and borrow this or borrow that. And as I heard some of your speakers speak today about how they had African-American educators at that time, and they had a stake in seeing African-American children become successful because they was their future for tomorrow. So I'm saying that it's not about one individual. It's we as a people have to come together to take care of our own, first of all, before we extend out to any other people. But because even the scripture tells us that, you know, he come to his own first, but we have to take care of how it's been spread abroad, you know. So I was just saying that I'm not blaming any individual. I'm just saying we as a people in the church, because I think that's the basics of knowledge that we really need to know in order to come out of the bondage. I mean, we learn from man and thinking that that's the knowledge that we need to come out of bondage, but I think it's the knowledge of God that frees us from these words in which we speak over ourselves, and even these actions and how we believe. We believe that, you know, that somehow it's about my children. My children, I mean, I can sit here and tell you some things about my children, and you'll say, well, that's good for you, but it's not about me or my children. That's about us as a people, as African Americans, because once we start dividing it up and say it's an individual thing, well, he or she and all these, then we really haven't come to the understanding that it's all about oneness, that we have to come together and understand that we have to have schools. And I say the church because I say that a lot of times we go to church and hear and a pastor will talk and take a single verse out of the Bible and then expound on that and sing a song, say a prayer, and collect some money, and then they go home. And even today I see that a lot of our, you know, singing, like some of the gospel singers will come into town, and they'll charge $35, $45 for people to come and hear them praise the Lord. But the man under the bridge whom Jesus come for, he can't hear them praise the Lord because he don't have the money.
And that's because we've given too much power to these churches. Yes. That's part of the problem, because we're relying so much on these churches. This whole idea that the church was at the center was actually born out of slavery. I mean, when we were in slavery, we were not allowed to have families. We were not allowed. It was illegal for us to congregate as a family. Right. If all three of us congregated and called ourselves a family, we would be killed. So that's where this whole idea that the church was at the center. Mm-hmm. It's the family that's really at the center. Right. And we all do live in one whole community, but it comes down to individual responsibility. I see Brian about to bite into that microphone. What you got to say over there, Brian?
And before you comment, sir, we appreciate your call. Unfortunately, we're running out of time, so I'm going to let Brian have the final say on this. Thank you very much. We appreciate you this morning.
You're welcome. I was also going to say thank you for the call. And then this is why I love Algernon, because that is a brilliant point, right? So it's not necessarily all or nothing. Is there, you know, institutional responsibility? Clearly, but you cannot lower the personal responsibility and the familial responsibilities of parents making sure that their kids are taken care of, whether it's education or et cetera. So, you know, that point is a very good one made. You know, I'm not really big on religious discussions, but I think it's interesting that black folks narrow the race discussion down to black and white, right? I mean, we're talking about America. Largely, you're really talking about black folks and white folks, you know, conflict on Native American land. Right. So if we were to talk about racism and the role of the church, there's an old Native American saying that, you know, that says when the white man came, he had his Bible and we had our land. And when he left, we had his Bible and he had our land. Right. So the role of the church, I think, is much bigger than black, white in America. Look all over the world. And I think
that's right.
That's exactly to your point as well about giving it too much power as an institution.
Exactly. Gentlemen, this has just been the most, I think, powerful conversation. At least that I have, and we always have good subject matter on Community Focus. I don't want to take away from that, but definitely the hour just doesn't do us justice on the subject matter.
We're going to do something special in the next couple of weeks. If you remember, we're going to talk about why does black America not talk about money? So we're going to talk about that in a couple of weeks. But sort of before we get out of here, I want to make sure everyone is listening, and I know everybody's sort of right there by their radio, right. So this is a good time to get this out. Upcoming this Thursday, I'm going to be hosting a class at the YWCA in downtown Greensboro called Keys to Money Mastery. As everyone out there knows, we are going through some tough economic times. People are dealing with higher food costs, higher energy costs, and maybe even the possibility of job loss because of some of our companies that are coming under pressure. So everybody wants to know, what's the secret to being wealthy? Well, on Thursday at the YWCA in downtown Greensboro, I'm going to be teaching a class on how you can learn how to master control of your money and start to create wealth. If you want to come to this program, it's absolutely free to the public. So we're providing a public service. Right. As I often tell people, I want to make sure I get these skills out because the more you know, that makes sure your kid will keep his hand off my television set. So, but if you want to come, you got to call down to the YWCA down in Greensboro and ask for Sharice Hart and let her know you're going to be coming down to see us.
And it starts at what time, Algernon? It
starts at 7:30 this upcoming Thursday on July 31st. We wanted to make sure we had it in the evening. It's not on Wednesday, so if you do the Bible study thing, you still can come. It's late enough in the evening. You should be able to get home and get the kids to bed and that type of thing. But come down on Thursday. Maybe Brian will come hang out with me for a little bit if you want to come down and meet him.
Done deal.
But we're going to be really trying to give out some good advice on how you can learn how to master control of your money and start to create wealth for yourself.
Fantastic. Algernon, Brian, thank you both very, very much.
We'll be back.
Absolutely. Oh, yeah. And looking forward to that day. In the meantime, thanks to all of you. I know we couldn't get to everybody. So that means we're going to have this topic of discussion again real soon.
Definitely.
Saturday's edition of Community Focus on the way, the old school show that brings those memories right back at you in just seconds. It's the best of the Tom Jordan Morning Show and all week long, weekend long. See, there I am, Rushing Monday. You've got the best R&B and old school right here, 97.1 QMG. Have a great weekend, everybody.